This podcast was produced and recorded in the studios of Cairns FM 89.1.
This is The Evolution of Intimacy with Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
You can start to feel bliss while you're vacuuming.
I don't know if I've tried that or not. Do I want to try it? What is it?
Very complex, very interesting.
Flogging, whipping, caning.
So there I was in my high heels and my little dress.
So it is purely a stigma.
Healthy sexual expression with other humans.
I went to the local women's health centre and went, I think I'm a lesbian. Is there a support group?
They don't know quite how to talk about it. It's actually a core skill in relationships.
That has always worked for me.
My guest is Cam Fraser, a men's sex coach. Cam is accredited with the World Association of Sex Coaches. Welcome, Cam.
Hey, Ella. Thanks for having me.
So, welcome. I'm really curious to hear a little bit about some of the presentations of male sexual difficulties that you speak to each day.
Well, the two most common ones that people come to me to work on are erectile dysfunction and premature ejaculation. And very often these are self-diagnosed labels as well. So I don't necessarily use the DSM, for example, in my work, and I'm not a sex therapist, I'm a sex coach, I do a bit of a screening with my potential clients and people that fill out my intake form around whether they could be clinically diagnosed for erectile dysfunction or for premature ejaculation. And most of the time, I'd probably say about 80% of the time, my clients don't actually meet the clinical criterion for these dysfunctions. So they maybe have much more of an erectile disappointment, so it's frustration around their erection reliability. And when it comes to premature ejaculation, again, they don't necessarily fit the criterion. So they're just ejaculating before they want to and before their partner wants them to, and it's causing them some distress. But I typically find that it's quite helpful to, I think language is really important and quite powerful. So I think it's important for my clients to disentangle the labeling that they've imposed upon themselves, because sometimes that can be quite limiting and it can actually hinder their progress. So I talk to them and educate them about what actually is erectile dysfunction and how it can be clinically diagnosed, and same thing with premature ejaculation. And that allows for a bit more openness with regards to their sexual journey, let's say.
Yeah, I love that, because disappointment, it sounds so much easier to deal with and approach than a diagnosis of a dysfunction, doesn't it? That sounds like a bit hopeless if you've got that.
Yeah, totally. It's like the language of dysfunction, in my opinion, I suppose, is like treating the body like a machine, right? Mm. That's broken or malfunctioning. And if you just do the right thing or input the right pill, let's say, right, or the right tool, then that function will go away and you'll start working properly again. And I don't think treating our bodies as these instruments or mechanisms to be fixed is really the right framework or approach for working with our sexuality and our experiences of pleasure and eroticism. I think it's too mechanistic. And so my approach, I suppose, with working with erectile dysfunction, for example, is typically reframing to erectile disappointment and saying that there's much more fluctuations in what we might term penile tumescence or rigidity. So that fluctuation between flaccid and erect, there's much more variations and fluctuations within the spectrum of normalcy than what a lot of people tend to think there is. A very common thing that I'll see with my male clients is they might have a couple of times struggles to get or maintain an erection, and they automatically jump to, oh no, I'm broken, I've got erectile dysfunction, should I be looking for Viagra, should I be looking for some sort of erectile dysfunction medication? And that's this kind of narrative or the social script that we have around what is to be expected of a penis, that it should always be hard and that it should stay hard for a long period of time, and there should be no fluctuation or variation in its rigidness, I start to do a bit of broadening of perspectives around what is to be expected from a penis, and blame porn, for example, for rarely ever showing any flaccid penises. We can blame our, I don't want to get too deep into it, but we can blame the amount of advertising that's gone into erectile dysfunction medications and perpetuating this idea around penises. But there is a pretty strong narrative that if you don't have an erection immediately, and if you don't maintain an erection indefinitely, and that doesn't happen all the time, then something is wrong with you. And that's just not the case, because our sexual arousal and sexual function is much more varied and diverse than that simple, narrow way of thinking about.
Yeah, and as soon as you're in that mindset of there's something wrong with me, it's not working, it's just going to perpetuate, isn't it? As soon as you're anxious, you're less likely to be in your body and enjoying the sexual experience, however hard the penis is.
You're 100% correct. Yeah, it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm. And anxiety is the cornerstone of both of these presentations, right? Like anxiety is one of the root causes of erection issues, and it's also one of the root causes of quick ejaculation issues. If there's no medical or physiological things contributing to those presentations, then it's very typically psychological or psychogenetic, and anxiety is the root of those two things. Mm. So they're very often framed as like two sides of the same coin, and that coin being anxiety.
Huh, yeah, that makes sense. And just touching on that medical aspect, though, I guess it is important to really mention that if people are listening and are having issues in this way, that they do get checked out medically first, because these things can also be symptoms of other underlying medical conditions, as far as I understand.
Yeah, very much so. And that's something that I always recommend to clients when they come see me, is like, have you spoken to a GP? Have you spoken to a urologist? Can we draw out those or cancel out those particular root causes? And like I said, 80% of the time, my clients do have that go ahead from their GP, being like, hey, there's nothing physically wrong. Mm. You know, there's nothing necessarily that's contributing to this. And very often the clients that I work with have said they've been prescribed pharmaceuticals and they don't necessarily want to go down that route. They feel like if there's nothing physically wrong, then they shouldn't necessarily need the medical intervention like a drug. And so they want to do something that's a bit more holistic or a bit more practical oriented with regards to changing their approach to sex, or doing some breathing exercises, or some Kegels, or just other sexual practices in general. So that tends to be the clientele that I best suit.
You are listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with me, Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
Most of us have not been encouraged or taught how to talk about sex.
They are curious.
Hang on a sec, I'm a woman, like, I have needs now.
Whole new level of sensation and pleasure. I looked at my yoni before and after and I was like, oh my God.
You may experience a range of emotions.
What we associate as being related to one gender or another, it changes all the time.
Pleasure is our birthright.
You're on these massive doses of steroids. I look like Bert Newton. I wouldn't have been attracted to myself.
So they were just so happy to know that A, they weren't alone, and B, that this was like a legitimate thing.
And that actually sounds really lovely and erotic, really pleasurable.
It's a secret.
Mind-blowing.
How does breathing help if you're disappointed with the hardness of your erections? How does it help to breathe?
Yes, my observation and from what I understand about the way our nervous systems work is, we've got two branches of the autonomic nervous system: the sympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for our fight or flight response, our survival response, and then we've also got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for our rest and digest response, our relaxation response. And we know that when we get anxious and when we get stressed and when we enter into that sympathetic branch of the nervous system, our breathing very often tends to rise up into our chest. This is known as thoracic breathing, and sometimes even up into our clavicles. And some people even hold their breath when they get stressed out, when they get tense. And that contributes to erection issues because erection and engorgement is a function of the parasympathetic nervous system. You need to be relaxed and having the blood flow one way that the nervous system contribute to this. And the elevated breathing and the chest breathing also contributes to quick ejaculation as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. If you do get an erection, you're more likely to ejaculate quite quickly because ejaculation is mediated by the sympathetic nervous system. So if we're overly engaging the sympathetic nervous system by being anxious, by elevating our breath into our chest, then we're less likely to get an erection and more likely to ejaculate quite quickly. So the beauty of doing some really deep, slow diaphragmatic breathing, and by that I mean drawing the breath down into the belly, using the diaphragm, that big dome-shaped muscle underneath the ribs, so that you're taking these deep breaths that are slow, that are full, that are engaging your diaphragm, you step into your parasympathetic response, which essentially slows you down, it relaxes you, it releases tension from your body. The beautiful thing about that is, like I said before, it puts you into your rest and digest response, your parasympathetic nervous system, which aids engorgement and erection, so it helps you get and maintain an erection. And it also takes you out of your sympathetic nervous system, so you're not on the edge of ejaculation. You're not driving towards an ejaculatory response because you're not engaging that part of your nervous system. Now, sexual arousal is this beautiful interplay between these two branches, along with other branches of the nervous system, but breathing is a really profound way to, we might say, take control of those sexual arousal responses. We can really start to see those shifts in engorgement and erection reliability and longevity in the sexual response when we start to breathe really deeply and slowly. So it's a foundational practice in all of the work that I do, really.
Fantastic. And I bet people are surprised when they come with these concerns and you're teaching them to breathe deeply, but what a free and easy way to start to work with this.
Yeah, and it sounds so simple, but we breathe like 30,000 times a day, right? Mm. And if we're breathing a particular way, through the sympathetic nervous system, it's a really strong habit. Mm. Right? Our body is very familiar with it. A lot of us are 90% of the time engaged in our sympathetic nervous system because of the world that we live in. And so to try and break that habit, it's like super simple, but it takes a bit of dedication, a bit of commitment. And that's even more so when we're in those heightened states of arousal where we're already engaging the sympathetic nervous system because there is excitement and sexual tension and eroticism and arousal anyway. So, it sounds super simple, and it kind of is, but it takes a little bit of practice.
Not easy necessarily. And you also mentioned Kegels, and if people have heard of that, they might be thinking that's for women or people that have had a baby. And so can you talk a bit about that in this perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So the Kegel exercise is a pelvic diaphragm squeezing and releasing exercise. So when you, a simple way to explain this is like when you need to go to the toilet and you stop the flow of urine, that's you doing a quote-unquote Kegel exercise, or what you're doing is you're engaging what's known as the pubococcygeal muscle, or the PC muscle for short. And you'll see this in men's health advice magazines and apps and things like that. You can get to like do these exercises, these PC squeezing exercises all the time throughout the day, which is great. It's a good first step. But what can happen is if you overdo these PC squeezes, and this is a really important piece that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, is you create more tension in the pelvis. And we know, as I kind of shared before, that tension can add to sympathetic nervous system activation. That tension can add to quick ejaculation. It can hinder your ability to get erections. So it's well and good to do your Kegel exercises, to squeeze regularly your PC muscle, but you want to combine it with active relaxing of the pelvic diaphragm muscles in general. Mm. So what might be called a reverse Kegel, or just a big deep breath into the belly as that bears down and pushes out through the pelvic diaphragm muscles, and just some relaxation in general. So taking a moment to like mindfully tune into the pelvic muscle area and actively relax. So just try and release tension as you go. And like I said before, breathing is a really good way of doing that. So you want a strong yet relaxed pelvic bowl, like a toned pelvic bowl. And I often think of someone like, Jason Momoa just chilling out on the couch, right? Like he's shredded and strong, but it's relaxed, so it's not tense. And the reason why that's a really healthy space for those muscles to be in terms of our sexual response, is it can help with your strength of erection, so erectile tumescence. It can really add to the rigidity of your erection, so that's helpful for maintaining erection. And those muscles, when utilized in a particular way, can also be helpful for delaying ejaculation as well. So there's some particular times during your arousal response that you can squeeze those muscles, and if they're quite strong and firm, then you squeeze them in a way that can help you delay your ejaculation. So it's a way of practicing ejaculatory control or ejaculatory choice, whatever your language is for it. So they're really helpful in a number of ways.
You are listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with me, Ella Shannon, a show about sex, relationships, and everything in between.
Most of us have not been encouraged or taught how to talk about sex.
They are curious.
Hang on a sec, I'm a woman, I have needs now.
Whole new level of sensation and pleasure.
I looked at my yoni before and after and I was like, oh my God.
You may experience a range of emotions.
What we associate as being related to one gender or another, it changes all the time.
Pleasure is our birthright.
You're on these massive doses of steroids. I looked like Bert Newton. I wouldn't have been attracted to myself.
So they were just so happy to know that A, they weren't alone, and B, that this was like a legitimate thing.
And that actually sounds really lovely and erotic, really pleasurable.
It's a secret.
Mind-blowing.
How does breathing help if you're disappointed with the hardness of your erections? How does it help to breathe?
Yes, my observation and from what I understand about the way our nervous systems work is, we've got two branches of the autonomic nervous system: the sympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for our fight or flight response, our survival response, and then we've also got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is responsible for our rest and digest response, our relaxation response. And we know that when we get anxious and when we get stressed and when we enter into that sympathetic branch of the nervous system, our breathing very often tends to rise up into our chest. This is known as thoracic breathing, and sometimes even up into our clavicles. And some people even hold their breath when they get stressed out, when they get tense. And that contributes to erection issues because erection and engorgement is a function of the parasympathetic nervous system. You need to be relaxed and having the blood flow in order to get erect. And so that's one way that the nervous system contribute to this. And the elevated breathing and the chest breathing also contributes to quick ejaculation as well. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. If you do get an erection, you're more likely to ejaculate quite quickly because ejaculation is mediated by the sympathetic nervous system. So if we're overly engaging the sympathetic nervous system by being anxious, by elevating our breath into our chest, then we're less likely to get an erection and more likely to ejaculate quite quickly. So the beauty of doing some really deep, slow diaphragmatic breathing, and by that I mean drawing the breath down into the belly, using the diaphragm, that big dome-shaped muscle underneath the ribs, so that you're taking these deep breaths that are slow, that are full, that are engaging your diaphragm, you step into your parasympathetic response, which essentially slows you down, it relaxes you, it releases tension from your body. The beautiful thing about that is, like I said before, it puts you into your rest and digest response, your parasympathetic nervous system, which aids engorgement and erection, so it helps you get and maintain an erection. And it also takes you out of your sympathetic nervous system, so you're not on the edge of ejaculation. You're not driving towards an ejaculatory response because you're not engaging that part of your nervous system. Now, sexual arousal is this beautiful interplay between these two branches, along with other branches of the nervous system, but breathing is a really profound way to, we might say, take control of those sexual arousal responses. We can really start to see those shifts in engorgement, engorgement and erection reliability and longevity in, you know, the sexual response when we start to breathe really deeply and slowly. So it's a foundational practice in all of the work that I do, really.
Fantastic. And I bet people are surprised when they come with these concerns and you're teaching them to breathe deeply, but what a free and easy way to start to work with this.
Yeah, and it sounds so simple, but we breathe like 30,000 times a day, right? Mm. And if we're breathing a particular way, you know, through the sympathetic nervous system, it's a really strong habit. Mm. Right? Our body is very familiar with it. A lot of us are, you know, 90% of the time engaged in our sympathetic nervous system because of the world that we live in. And so to try and break that habit, it's like super yeah. simple, but it takes a bit of dedication, a bit of commitment. And yeah. that's even more so when we're in those heightened states of arousal where we're already engaging the sympathetic nervous system because there is excitement and sexual tension and eroticism and arousal anyway. So, it sounds super simple, and it kind of is, but it takes a little bit of practice.
Not easy necessarily. And no. You also mentioned Kegels, and if people have heard of that, they might be thinking that's for women or people that have had a baby. And so can you talk a bit about that in this perspective?
Yeah, for sure. So the Kegel exercise is a pelvic diaphragm squeezing and releasing exercise. So when you, a simple way to explain this is like when you need to go to the toilet and you stop the flow of urine, that's you doing a quote-unquote Kegel exercise, or what is really what you're doing is you're engaging what's known as the pubococcygeal muscle, or the PC muscle for short. And you'll see this in men's health advice magazines and apps and things like that. You can get to like do these exercises, these PC squeezing exercises all the time, you know, throughout the day, which is great, a good first step. But what can happen is if you overdo these PC squeezes, and this is a really important piece that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, is you create more tension in the pelvis. And we know, as I kind of shared before, that tension can add to sympathetic nervous system activation. Tension can add to quick ejaculation. It can hinder your ability to get erections. So it's well and good to do your Kegel exercises, to squeeze regularly your PC muscle, but you want to combine it with active relaxing of the pelvic diaphragm muscles in general. Mm. So what might be called a reverse Kegel, or just a big deep breath into the belly as that bears down and pushes out through the pelvic diaphragm muscles, and just some relaxation in general. So taking a moment to like mindfully tune into the pelvic muscle area and actively relax. So just try and release tension as you go. And like I said before, breathing is a really good way of doing that. So you want a strong yet relaxed pelvic bowl, like a toned pelvic bowl. And I often think of someone like, you know, Jason Momoa just chilling out on the couch, right? Like he's you know, shredded and strong, but it's relaxed, so it's not tense. Mm. And the reason why that's a really healthy space for those muscles to be in terms of our sexual response is it can help with your strength of erection, so erectile tumescence. It can really add to the rigidity of your erection, so that's helpful for maintaining erection. And those muscles, when utilized in a particular way, can also be helpful for delaying ejaculation as well. So there's some particular times during your arousal response that you can squeeze those muscles, and if they're quite strong and firm, then you squeeze them in a way that can help you delay your ejaculation. So it's a way of practicing ejaculatory control or ejaculatory choice, whatever your language is for it. So they're really helpful in a number of ways.
And being toned in that way can help orgasms feel more pleasurable and more powerful as well, can't they?
Yes, thank you for bringing it back to pleasure, because you're 100% right. It does. The more strength that you have in those muscles, the stronger they contract, and so the more intense your orgasms feel. So yes, 100% agree with you.
Win-win.
And yeah, totally.
And Cam, what about for partners of people that are experiencing some challenges, some disappointment in this way?
Yeah, so the first thing that I often share with partners is to cultivate a bit of a mindset which I call the "it's not a big deal" mindset. Mm. And what I mean by this is, like, it might happen. It might happen that your partner struggles to get or maintain an erection, and they get in their head about it, and they maybe go, oh, I've just ruined sex, and my partner thinks less of me, or I'm less of a man. That's a big thing that a lot of men tend to think, is that their masculinity is somehow affected by this. Or they might ejaculate quite quickly, and again, similar stories might pop up to them of, I've ruined this, it's all over, my partner's going to think that I'm less than. And if you're able to hold a mindset of, hey, I'm not going anywhere, like, I still want to be sexual with you, I still enjoy having sex with you, there's still other things we can do, we've got toys, you've got a tongue, we've got other body parts, we can still be in pleasure with one another. It doesn't have to be so phallocentric or penis-centric, right? Like, there's this, within this, like, it's not a big deal mindset, there's this untacking of sex needing to revolve around the penis. Because for a lot of couples, if one of the partners, the partner with the penis, has struggled to get an erection, then sex is oftentimes off the table. Or if that same partner ejaculates, then sex is finished. And so in both of those scenarios, it's, sex is determined by what the penis is or isn't doing. And so within this, hey, it's not a big deal kind of mindset, there's this invitation to explore sex in a diverse array of ways, like broadening your perspective and definitions of sex and pleasure to incorporate things that don't involve the penis. So there's this really beautiful opportunity that partners have, and I see this in the couples work that I do, to be a bit of a inspiration for their partner to explore sex and pleasure in different ways with them, in ways that don't revolve around an erect penis, because that's what a lot of couples are doing. So that's my first suggestion, I suppose. And beyond that as well, it can be helpful to have conversations outside of the sexual context about what it is that you enjoy that doesn't involve a penis, right? If it's a toy, if it's a particular fantasy, if it's a type of dirty talk that they use, if it's specific locations, right? If it's a thing that they do with their hands or their tongue, like just really broadening your conversations around sex as well can be really helpful for alleviating the pressure that a lot of men or male partners feel for their penis to act a certain way, for the expectations that they place upon their penis. So if that's something that some partners are dealing with, then hopefully those suggestions resonate with them.
Yeah, gorgeous. There's such a lot of opportunity in that, isn't there? Because otherwise you just, business as usual, penis and vagina sex, and what you're describing just sounds so much more playful and so much more possibility and opportunity for connection that might just be even better.
Yeah, you're right. And that's like the positive reframe here around these things that are framed as dysfunctions or things that are broken with you. The affirmation or the reframe or the challenge to that is like, what an invitation, what an opportunity to explore things that don't involve your erect penis, right? In a way to explore pleasure in so many different ways. And oftentimes I find that kind of release of expectation, that release of pressure, coupled with the exploration of pleasure for pleasure's sake, starts to alleviate the psychological, erectile dysfunction or psychological premature ejaculation, because of the fact that they don't feel that pressure, they don't feel that expectation put upon them, they don't feel that anxiety anymore, and they're also enjoying themselves and they're experiencing pleasure. So it's this beautiful positive snowball effect.
Fantastic. So Cam, if people have been listening and they're really interested to find out more about you or your work, how could they go about finding you?
Yeah, they can find me on social media. I am at the Cam Fraser on every social media platform, and they're welcome to reach out to me if they like. I really love hearing from people online and responding and answering questions. And if they want to go a little bit deeper with my work, they can find me on my website, which is cam-fraser.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming and talking about this, Cam. It's been a pleasure.
No, thanks for having me. It was really lovely.
You've been listening to The Evolution of Intimacy with Ella Shannon.
We're feeling juicy the whole day.
Every desire I could possibly
possibly think of.
What sort of impact would it have?
They want it, they're going to go and get it. They don't think of long-term consequences.
Oh, did that feel really nice? Oh, yes, that felt really delicious.
Being able to feel good about my body again, that's been a huge thing.
All anybody really wants in this world is to feel seen and heard.
We actually do have a lot that connects us physically.
It's making people feel good.
There is a real sense of hopefulness that returns in the relationship.
A really beautiful thing.
Take that beauty and that calmness and that bliss and that sense of peace out into the world.
Thank you for listening, and I hope we've inspired you with our juicy conversations on this episode of The Evolution of Intimacy. If you would like to go deeper, you can book a session of relationship counselling, sex therapy, or individual counselling via my website. I work in person in Cairns, tropical far north Queensland, or I can meet you online anywhere in the world. Or you might prefer to go at your own pace with my 12-lesson relationship and intimacy online course. To book or to listen to previous episodes, visit my website, ellashannon.com, or follow me on the socials at Evolution of Intimacy. Finally, please go to iTunes and write me a quick review if you're feeling kind. Thank you, lovelies, and see you next time.